we talked with someone recently who was working on the supply chain in Mexico. His name is Andrew Hubert. And he had mentioned that that kind of sourcing environment was not there, at least from what he saw, and that companies were who are producing in Mexico were maybe hesitant to talk to each other because I guess they don't want to lose their competitive edge. Mm-hmm. And so it can make the sourcing more difficult and maybe put some of that burden back onto the customer. Yeah. Are you guys then taking up that burden?
And we have in many cases, and in some cases on drastic material, you know, modules, not even just components. I mean, you know, something similar to a CPU. And it's happened multiple times where we've had to strategically facilitate a backdoor resource, if you will. That's why it's so key to align yourself with someone who understands strategically how parts move throughout the world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Altium On Track podcast. I'm your host, Zach Peterson. Today, we're talking with Cody Endlich, head of strategic sourcing at Macrofab. If you're familiar with the Altimade platform, then you should know that this links directly to Macrofab. So it's very nice to have someone from Macrofab here to talk with us today. Cody, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Zach.
Yeah, I don't get too much of an opportunity to talk to sourcing people or procurement people, supply chain people, so I thought this would be fun. Maybe before we talk about what Macrofab does, give us an overview of your background and how you got started at Macrofab.
Sure. So I have a background on the distribution side of the house, more specifically, the open market distribution side of the house, working with smaller independent distributors to the biggest independent distributor in the world in Smith & Associates here locally in Houston. Early on with Macrofab, I was, funnily enough, I was actually in a sales role and very early on, working closely with procurement on a few projects, realized that there was probably a greater advantage for me to move over to a sourcing role to kind of fill those gaps. Obviously, this is, you know, 2021. We're well into the chip shortage. And, you know, there was obviously quite a few jobs in a lead time limbo, if you will. So after freeing up a few of those jobs and getting them to production, finding our customers some of the more hotter ticket items that they needed to go to production, I transitioned into a full-time strategic sourcing role for Macrofab. So
you said, you know, you got into this kind of role by freeing up some production jobs where lead time was in limbo. Mm-hmm. I take that to mean you're the guy that knows how to find the hard to find components and probably how to verify the source as well.
Yeah. So to just dispense with the pleasantries, Zach, I mean, quite frankly, what we've done is internalize the broker process, right? So where traditionally a lot of my buyers or buyers at other CMs and OEMs would come to a point to where a part is not in stock at authorized or franchise, they have a list of their go-to AEs at the big, you know, players in the independent market. And sending these guys a list saying, hey, here's my parts for the week. I'm handling that for all of our production jobs across the board internally. It works out well for us, obviously, as you can imagine, because we're cutting out what is, I mean, standard right now, maybe 20 to 40 points added on a part if you're buying through an open market broker versus actually knowing where the stock is, going directly to that independent stocking distributor who has the stock, creating a relationship with them, and bringing the product in ourselves. It saves us tons of money. It saves us lead time, obviously, and helps us get a little bit tighter on quality, right? Because there's less hands the parts are exchanging through before they make it to us. So, and quite frankly, the market's dictated we do things like this, right? We're a CM. I think it goes without saying that we're always in a position to be very aggressive on our quotes and our jobs without sacrificing quality. And I think this puts us in a really great position to take advantage of our resources and pass that, you know, benefit down to our customers. So
maybe give us an overview of Macrofab and what Macrofab does differently from some of the other CMs out there.
Yeah, great. So So MacroFab is essentially a platform, and the traditional capacitance in which customers would interact with us would generally be an EE would come to our platform with a design ready to go to production. It's not an EDA tool. It's a platform where an engineer can come in and drag and drop their CAD files, their BOM, everything for one specific production run. And the platform will transition that into a visualization of the board, giving them an idea of what it's going to look like. It allows them to do a little bit of iterating right there on the platform, a little bit of last minute changes if there's some real estate that was juxtapositioned a little bit off. And then they just go to the next screen. On the next screen, it'll bring up their BOM. The bill of materials is already automatically uploaded into a formatted layout that will show you real-time stock levels through authorized and franchise distribution for those parts that you are requiring for the specific build. It'll also provide alternates for those parts as well. So if you expand into each individual component, you can see alternates listed. And then once the BOM's squared away, we move into the next step, which is another screen where we're moving forward to get a quote. A fast, you know, good, better, best. There's options. And essentially, the big difference with us and having a network of manufacturing partners is the capacitance and the elasticity and the customization, if you will, to each customer's specific product run, right? Obviously, a, you know, 10,000 piece run of a, you know, consumer electronic product is going to take a little bit different job level than a military government computing militarized company that's looking to produce with, you know, a bunch of ITAR restrictions. We have that flexibility within our manufacturing network. So they get a quote, they like what they see, they hit place an order, and whether it's 10 boards or 10,000 boards, the order gets placed and positioned with the appropriate partner. We're API'd into all of these partners. So the capacitance that each one of them have is accessible to us in real time. So we know where we're going. And once the job is placed, they can track that job and its progress throughout. It's cheeky, but I hate to use it, but almost like the Domino's pizza tracker, right? Trevor, put your pizza in the oven. You know, Becky is putting it in the box, and, you know, you get to follow it along the way. But I think it creates, it allows engineers, two big things. I think it allows them to maintain accountability and ownership of their design, right? While having complete communication with the factory in real time of what's going on, what's happening, if there's any issues. I think in a nutshell, that's kind of the Amazon of contract manufacturing, so to speak.
Interesting. So when you say a manufacturing partner network, where are your partners located? I think that's a big issue for some folks. They don't want to go overseas, or they're legally restricted from going maybe outside of North America or outside of Europe.
Of course. Yeah, great question. So we are entirely CONUS, continental U.S., and North America and Mexico. So we don't have any partners in Asia. We're not currently working on any jobs producing going on in Asia or Europe. South America, everything is CONUS. So there's obviously a massive undertone of nearshoring and reshoring going on there. And that's a big key add that our customers really align with. If they're looking to reshore, bring it back to the US, or if there is safety concerns regarding the product, whatever the case is, intellectual concerns across, you know, international, whatever the case is. I mean, we're allowed to circumvent that by offering our customers a reshoring solution. And obviously, it goes without saying, the growing manufacturing capabilities in Mexico, trying to rival what's, you know, been going on for decades and decades in Asia. We do see a lot of benefit, and we do actually see customers, more customers moving to Mexico. We have a facility in Guadalajara. So that's a major aspect of our mission, right, is the reshoring effort as well.
You know, the reshoring trend is relatively new, mm-hmm. But you guys are not new, right? Right. Macrofab's been around for a little while.
Exactly.
So you guys were already doing the reshoring thing before it was a trend.
Sure. Yeah.
What drove that? Was that part of the core strategy for the business when it was first founded?
Now, I don't want to speak out of turn, but if I would have to guess, you know, if you look at us in terms of, you know, early on in inception, Macrofab was really created for the manufacturing companies that are having trouble coming to production. They're finding that when they go to a CM, the CM says, oh, well, you know, we're not going to bother ourselves with a 250 piece run. You know, we don't have time for this. You know, they're having trouble going to production, period. So when we offer that elasticity to not only facilitate a solution for a customer that's doing a proto run or an R&D run, but on a scale, and everything is already organically centralized here in the U.S. I think that just grew. But where we really saw a trend was when we did have customers early on expressing an interest, not only do we want to pull out of Asia, we want more control, we want more communication, we want to know exactly what's going on in real time. We need better communication, we need better visibility. And I think that trust aspect kind of aligns with the reshoring and keeping it organic and you know, here in the U.S. And so I don't know if that was, you know, an early driving factor, but it's something that we've been focused on for years now. And yeah, it's certainly not something that, you know, we're spotting a trend and reinventing and shifting the way we do things. I mean, this has been a center of our mission, the reshoring aspect, for years now. So. Yeah.
So it sounds like this is really one of the key benefits that people have probably been responding to quite a bit recently. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Are there any copycats out there that might be trying to mimic this kind of model to bring manufacturing, let's say, closer to home?
None that I've paid attention to. I think a lot of companies are it's very popular right now, right? Everybody's, I think what's more important is, you know, it's funny because a lot of the companies, OEMs specifically, and CMs are guilty of it as well. It's following the trend, following the trend, following the trend. And I think the main point here is kind of like what Macrofab has done is, okay, yeah, it's great. We see the chip markets lighting up, opening up. We see, you know, okay, reshoring, but what is that really? And we see customers saying, okay, instead of just getting in line and jumping on the reshoring bandwagon, breaking it down, how does that look? Are we reshoring our manufacturing? Are we reshoring our reliability on our sourcing for components as well? Are we going to try to, because so now customers are not just for building, they're aligning with partners for sourcing as well, so that they don't have that reliance on sending a blind purchase order for $50,000 worth of parts to Asia, having to wire the money before they even receive the parts and confirm whether they're new or that. I mean, you know, that it all plays into the big picture, right, of reshoring. So that's really what I mean, I'm sure there's other companies and there's a massive reshoring effort all across the board. Competitors, I couldn't tell you.
Because what you're describing for what the platform does and I think in terms of the user experience is it's kind of half, you know, connected manufacturing platform. Mm-hmm. And I know of one other, but not with the capacity access in North America. But mm-hmm. then in a way, it's kind of a 3PL.
Yeah, it's in terms of having the capacitance specifically in the US, it's vital because it's plentiful. right? It's never ending, basically, in Asia, and it's harder in some cases, right, to sell, because it is a financial component to all of this. And I think that's really where the main focus has been, is to make sure that we're bridging that gap seamlessly, that we're not leaving any stones unturned. Okay. We're going to bring it back from Asia. That's been doing our manufacturing for the past 50 years. You know, how is this really going to affect us financially? And, you know, it's getting very resourceful in other aspects. Like I said, that comes down to the component sourcing, that comes down to the raw material sourcing for the secondary builds, because we're obviously not just a PCBA. We do secondary assemblies, box builds, you know, the full product. So it is a challenge to focus on how to keep that completely reshored. We're doing a pretty good job so far.
So you also mentioned the sourcing aspect and mm-hmm. bringing that back on shore, rather than just sending out, you know, a blind purchase order to someone in Asia who
sure.
you may not know very well.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what the sourcing picture looks like for you guys, because, you know, if someone goes over to Asia and they want to produce, you know, an entire product, if they go to the right factory, the factory owner is going to be able to coordinate with 5 or 10 other people that they know. And by the end of the day, they've got a plan in place to produce for you. And it can probably scale up to thousands, tens of thousands of units, however big you need to go. We talked with someone recently who's working on the supply chain in Mexico. His name is Andrew Hubert. And he had mentioned that kind of sourcing environment was not there, at least from what he saw, and that companies who are producing in Mexico were maybe hesitant to talk to each other because I guess they don't want to lose their competitive edge. Mm-hmm. And so it can make the sourcing more difficult and maybe put some of that burden back onto the customer. Yeah. Are you guys then taking up that burden if you guys are going to produce with part of the build going on in North America?
Correct. Yes. And we have in many cases, and in some cases on drastic material, you know, modules, not even just components. I mean, you know, something similar to a CPU, you know, we've had to go directly to a European partner, right? That opened us into a global pot, if you will, a lot of this specific module. And it's happened multiple times where we've had to strategically facilitate a backdoor resource, if you will. That's why it's so key to align yourself with someone who understands strategically how parts move throughout the world, right? What a lot of customers don't understand is there are avenues to travel down where you might have a job sitting in limbo, waiting in a 26-week lead time for one component. And, you know, Sony bought 120,000 pieces of that component last year, and you don't know that there's a strategic partner that connects the dots to say, hey, well, guess what? They're only going to allocate 50% of that stock for production. They have a 10% cushion, and they've opened the rest up to us. We can get you what you need in 3 days. That's what we're doing. I mean, and so that's that added value you get when you start operating as the broker, for lack of a better phrase, versus relying on the broker. And when you talk about reshoring, then yes, you start to build those resources in-house and stateside to where the reach outside of the U.S. is minimal, right? And the reliance, the assets and liabilities are CONUS, right? They're on us. And we see who we're dealing with. And hey, look, this isn't I say this cheekishly, I guess. I don't know. This isn't a bash, you know, Hong Kong or Shenzhen, session either. We do have key partners in Asia. It's a finite list, right? They've earned a spot on that list because we know who they are. They work well with our partners, our test labs, our escrow partners. Funds are never transferred unless parts are on our dock with a past, a confirmed test report. It's rare, right? We have a very finite group. You can get lost, very quickly and very easily, trying to take that on yourself. And that's what a lot of customers have felt relieved is just turning that over to us, because we're able to package that entire service into one offering, right?
Now you mentioned something here, which was test. And I take that to mean counterfeit testing of components.
Sure. Absolutely.
So what level of testing or inspection are you guys doing? Is this X-raying the die? Is this chemical testing on the exterior? Are you trying to identify maybe not a fake, but a used component or an old component?
Gotcha. So first and foremost, and this we're really proud to say this, in the year, almost 2 years that we've been doing strategic sourcing here, we have a 0% component failure rate. When that's not 0% counterfeit component, that's, improper storage, whatever the case is. We're running a 0% component failure rate on our strategic sourcing side. And that can actually not be said right now for our authorized distribution side. We've gotten some parts in from even the big guys recently where it's like, who stored these? You know, stuff's moving so fast. The market is opening up and stuff's moving slow for the independent market right now, but it's moving very quickly and actually pretty steadily in the authorized. So we don't know what's going on. We just know that when it hits our dock, we're trusting on the authorized and franchise side that everything is to be exactly like it's supposed to be, right? I mean, that's just the phrase, I think the sentiment across the industry, right? Everybody says we only buy from authorized and franchised, even when you know they don't buy from authorized and franchise only, right? But yes, so when we do go to open market, we do have capability to do the whole menu of testing, from basic EVI, acetone swiping, decap. We're doing solderability. Now, this is not MacroFab's internal capability. Again, we've partnered with the largest test laboratory in Shenzhen and Hong Kong in Whitehorse. Nothing leaves Asia unless it has passed through Whitehorse. We're also members of ERAI. So anytime before we even go to a potential vendor, they are highly scrutinized through the ERAI system, and I'm sure you're well aware of ERAI and how they're somewhat of a unspoken supreme authority when it comes to counterfeit mitigation in the market, right? And we find a lot of benefit in that partner, both of those partnerships. And that really allows us to hone in to whatever level the customer needs us to take it to. You know, if they require a full function test, then we'll do it. And we provide that, and nothing ships until everything's confirmed, new and original. So that's kind of how we go about it.
So what you're describing here and the folks that you're procuring through, when you maybe have to go from authorized distributors to a broker, or you guys are acting like a broker yourself, I think when most people hear the word broker, they're maybe thinking, oh, you mean that list of companies that I see on Octopart under the non-authorized distributors section?
Sure.
Could that also be considered a broker? Absolutely. Are those...
Absolutely. Okay. That is a broker or an independent distributor. Now, it's really good to make that distinction, right? You do have independent distributors and you have brokers. This is just the facts. An independent stocking distributor and a broker. An independent stocking distributor is going to have a certified AS6081, AS9120, ISO certifications, every one of them under the sun, an actual physical warehouse with processes and ironclad QMS, testing procedures in-house, the likes of the Smiths and the Velocities and the Fusions of the world, okay, or the America 2s. And that's a big difference from the not a bad guy, but the guy in Lakeland that's working out of his garage that's, you know, kind of retired and has a couple of customers, but also does sourcing on the side. That is a broker, right? And then you also have boiler room situations where you have a guy running five kids in a call center, just jamming people up for parts all day, right? These are brokers. And I wouldn't position ourselves as a broker whatsoever. Essentially, what we've done is taken the already known industry resources at pretty much everyone's disposal and decided to capitalize on them and bring that function that has traditionally been an outside function that has, or a third party function that has existed for years between buyer and independent distributor rep. And we've decided to bring that process in-house and do it ourselves. So when we're doing our own resourcing and doing our own sourcing, especially, it was very important early on to make it established that we were doing this correctly. And so it was key partnerships like aligning with the RAI and becoming very good partners with Whitehorse to make sure that we were doing that.
Yeah, because what you're describing here, I think, is maybe going to be seen as a bit opaque or inaccessible for smaller companies, or for even for like an individual designer or a consultant who may need to manage production on behalf of a client. Sure. You know, if they're trying to procure and they have an issue with a long lead time part, you know, they've probably got two avenues, right? One, change the design and find an alternative. So that can be a headache. They might find someone who is a distributor in Asia. Maybe they're a non-authorized distributor, but they put these insane markups on some components, like, you know, 20 or 25X markups sometimes. And it's just crazy the prices that they try and charge. But I think people may feel they're backed into a corner a little bit, and they got to get this build out and they have no other choice. And so they're weighing, well, do we spend 20 hours changing the design, or do we just bite the bullet and spend all this extra money to just buy this one part? Mm-hmm. So you guys have really identified the larger broker, I guess you could say, or the larger, partner who's able to access, like you mentioned, you know, maybe a stock lot of 50,000 components from Sony.
Sure. Right. And, I have to kind of put my sales shoes on at this point and say, you know, we do have it right. In that facet, how do I say this politely? I want to not say we're not trying to give the house away, but I mean, this is where it's important to say, you know, it's going to turn heads, right? If nobody wants to talk about reshoring, maybe this turns their head. Hey, well, you have a partner here that's been doing this. You need to align with someone like Macrofab, it sounds like. We're certainly not out to become some type of, the next big part distributor. This is a service that is provided to our customers that want to go to production. And it kind of is maybe a little gun check moment for some people that don't want to change the way that they do things. Or maybe they do want to do things, but they're hesitant to partner with someone and or don't know who to partner with. It's kind of a gut check moment of how bad do we really want to go to production? And if aligning yourself with a partner like Macrofab allows you access to the components that you need to go to production, it just sounds kind of like a no-brainer that would be the best option, you know, for me if I was in that position.
I think another thing that maybe mid-sized companies might do, because they have to maybe order in slightly larger amounts, and of course, once they see, you know, the broker markup on something like Octopart, they really shy away from that, is they may go to a 3PL to try and coordinate all this.
Right.
And it seems like that's going to be just another layer of overhead for them that's going to impact their ability to be competitive.
It's really important to discern again between a fly-by-night one component situation with a broker and actually creating a relationship with a solid supplier who is consistent in pricing and quality, right? So, and I think the problem is not having the partner to interact with on that level and just saying, hey, we're going to do it on our own. I mean, we've had plenty of customers saying, hey, we're just going to roll the ball on these parts that we saw on eBay, right? And it's again, that's the risk you run in taking on that responsibility yourself and without being absolutely sure of how that side of the market works. And it's funny because components play such an integral aspect to this entire picture, but it's the most clandestine, almost ill-researched, I guess, if you will, side of the house, right? I mean, and I think now, coming off the back of this shortage, you're finding companies saying, okay, well, it's great that the markets are lighting up again, but how do we not be in the situation we were 2 years ago? How do we not let Ford and Apple beat us to the table again? You know, what do we need to do to forecast, right? I mean, forecasting, this is where forecasting comes. It's getting back to the basics. I mean, forecasting is wildly different when you're going at it from an uninformed perspective of what's on fine chips and what's on Octopart. And this is, I guess, what I've got to work with versus aligning yourself with a strategic partner that can give you oversight that no one else can. They can give you insight into lead times, life cycles, you know, and that's what we're doing too. We're not just, you know, I'm not just out here finding parts, you know, we're digging into data sheets, we're digging into life cycles of parts, and we're passing that data on. We're reverse engineering parts so that when we come to a situation where all hands are up in the air and we find out, hey, this is just a packaging difference, you guys, you know, we're making sure that there's no stone unturned and there's nothing being overlooked on the front end so much to where we don't really find ourselves on the back end situations where we're having to roll the dice with some random Asian distributor, right? Or somebody just posting stock onto eBay or something like that.
That's funny. You brought up posting stock onto eBay. Sometimes I do see that myself. And you always got to wonder, you know, who the heck is this person?
Sure. Yeah. It's crazy. But, you know, and sometimes it works out. And I'll say this about counterfeits too. You know, we've had test lab reports that have come back and said, this is a Philips marked part. Even from Philips saying, hey, look, we didn't manufacture this, but it outperforms everything that we have manufactured, right? I mean, so you've got counterfeits now that'll outperform the part that they're counterfeiting. I mean, that's how high this goes. And it's volatile, to say the least, right? But it's always been this way. And I think that's the most important thing to really point out here is it's, you know, while we're all coming on the back end and this shortage really brought everybody's attention to the fact that, hey, guess what? You know, the independent market's been around for 40 years. Smith's a 40-year-old company next year. America Too's been around forever. This open market, these very trustworthy, high-level electronic component independence component suppliers, they've been around for 40 years, you know, so this isn't just stuff that, you know, now that everybody's kind of opening up to, okay, well, all of our stock is, you know, all of our parts are out of stock. Well, what's this? Oh, they're all brokers. No. This is what has allowed companies like HP, Dell, Acer, Sony, Samsung to Ford and Apple to make it through. And yeah, everybody's taking a hit, but they're not running around for stock. Their shelves are full. They're selling their excess during a shortage. So that's the whole position people should strive to be in, is how solid can we get on our supply chain to where we just move in forward. We move so close to a vertical supply chain to where we just own our supply chain, right? We own it from end to end. And of course, we're talking e-bombs specifically here. Yeah, it's really interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see how that side of this, you know, reshoring trend kind of kind of develops or if it doesn't.
Well, speaking of reshoring, something just recently that was in the news was that Mexico actually surpassed China as the new number one trading partner with the United States.
Yes.
I think the differential is only 2%, so it's not a giant differential. But I think given the widely recognized advantages of producing in Mexico, especially when your end market is probably the US and Canada,
right,
and then your end market is Western Europe, mm-hmm. I think it would be reasonable to expect that that differential is going to expand, sure. Especially when you start considering more electronics manufacturing in Mexico. Would you agree?
100%. I mean, logistically, it makes sense from a quality standpoint, right? There's a lot easier. They're more accessible than the shadow partner in Shenzhen. And yeah, 100%. I'd agree.
So do you see any element of government policy or geopolitics affecting that move? Or is that going to be something that wanes and people are going to say, yeah, you know, it was tough 5 years ago back in 2022, 2023, but we can go back to Asia. Is this going to be a temporary thing or is there going to be any kind of element of ongoing policy changes and geopolitics that really, you know, keep people in Mexico? Sure. Or elsewhere in Latin America.
I just think it's too early to, for me at least. I mean, I've never been great with, being not optimistic, but I've never been a great at guessing. I guess it's a horrible way to put it, but I'm having a brain fart. I think it's just too early, right? Because, you know, with what Taiwan Semiconductor is doing in Arizona, and I really want to see what, after how this chip market rebound is going to affect manufacturability first. I mean, I think it's a little too early to call in my point of view. I think that regardless of what's happening in the geopolitical landscape, you're still going to have customers or companies constantly looking at reshoring, whether it is to US, whether it is to a partner in Mexico and the US. I see that growing steadily, and I don't see that slowing down. But on a geopolitical scale, I think that, you know, I look at everything in terms of a chip standpoint because I'm a chip guy, and I really want to see how this rebound, because it's very interesting right now. It's kind of quiet because not only are we somewhat seeing a rebound, but it's being met with a pretty aggressive level of drop in demand, right? So while markets are freeing up, the demand's slowing down as well. So I think I'd like to see some more stabilization first before I could make a call on that. But no doubt that I don't think it's going to have any effect on the reshoring effort. I think if anything, it's going to push the reshoring effort for companies to just have a little bit more of peace of mind, right?
Well, with that in mind, where does Macrofab see its biggest growth in terms of its partner network to support more customers?
Certainly in Mexico. We do have a great amount of capacitance in Mexico right now, but again, it's hard to give a specific answer when you're talking about North America and the United States specifically, because the capacitance is just, it's so vast, and the elasticity based on each different partner is also going to be dependent upon each specific job, but we're not running into a capacitance issue on our end whatsoever, which is a very good thing. I know that, that model has served well to keep us running very smooth from a pre-production kitting planning to we're running, first articles and everything. So I think, we are on par to do nothing but add more capacitance in most cases on our end. So,
well, you know, as all of this stuff evolves, I mean, we'd love to have you come back and talk more about all of these trends, especially as the semiconductor cycle, you know, picks back up and this, right, you know, newest round of investment kind of winds down and factories come online. It's going to be interesting to see how the sourcing picture starts to change.
Yeah, it is. I'm really excited. And again, I'm really excited to see how that plays into the reshoring effort. And I think if the ultimate combination is going to be marrying the two, right? How do we get our manufacturing capabilities reshored intelligently? And how do we marry that with a more reshored focused CONUS based supply chain sourcing effort as well? And the marriage of the two is definitely going to make a big difference. And I'm excited to see what happens. Yeah. Thank you guys.
Very much. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that all evolves. Cody, thanks so much for being with us. To everyone that's listening on audio and watching on YouTube, we've been talking with Cody Endlich, head of strategic sourcing at MacroFab. Make sure to go check out the show notes. We'll have some great resources there where you can learn more about MacroFab, and make sure to hit the subscribe button. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to keep up with all of our podcast episodes and tutorials as they come out.